Welcome to the Real Education Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Bowles, and on this show, I interview remarkable people who think way outside the box in education. To listen to more episodes, learn more about my guests, or become a patron of this ad and sponsor-free show, visit blakebowles.com/podcast. You can also email me at yourstruly@blakebowles.com. Now, on to the show. My guests today are Thomas Parker and Nancy Tilton of the Agile Learning Centers. Thomas and Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Blake.
All right, let's start with the name, Agile Learning Centers. What does that even mean? What's an Agile Learning Center?
Well, an Agile Learning Center is, I guess, in a lot of ways, an intentional learning community for self-directed learners. It's a name that really represents kind of an emergent model that has changed and is changing, but is meant to be applied to self-directed learning communities of various shapes and sizes. So far, there's two K to 12, or one pre-K to 12 and one K to 12 school that use the model, and a few homeschool collectives have been using it. And it's also something that we feel could apply to a school within a school or an after-school program and a summer camp, which is already part of the mix as well so far. So that's a kind of pragmatic answer.
We borrow tools and practices from agile software management to create healthy cultures in the school. You know, one of our fundamental roots is that you learn more from the culture and environment that you're immersed in than from the content that you're taught. So healthy culture creation is our number one focus in the schools.
So an Agile Learning Center is not a physical center necessarily. It's more of a framework that can be applied to a center or, like you said, a summer camp or a homeschool group. Can an individual apply an Agile Learning Center approach?
Yeah, and families too. Bruce Feiler, is that how you say his name? He has a great TED Talk called Agile Programming for the Family, and we've had families use some of our tools and practices at home to do family meetings and to, you know, create a happy home life as well. And there's definitely tools and practices that you could use for your own personal management. Thomas can probably speak more to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess an Agile Learning Center, in my mind, kind of refers more to the collective community entity that's applying, you know, various parts of the ALC model or toolkit. And so, you know, there's lots of personal development and personal workflow and project management tools and that kind of stuff that you could use as an individual. But there's also this kind of the other piece to it that is equally important is the community aspect and learning to collaborate with others, learning to create something that's bigger than just the sum of the individuals. So that shows up everywhere in our lives. So like Nancy said, you could apply that to family, to lots of different groups and communities. So far the distinction has been around schools and kind of homeschooling, unschooling, learning communities. But I suppose it could branch out even further than that.
Our friends in Asheville, Steve Cooperman and Liam, who I know you know, are using some of our tools and practices as they create this giant co-working space. And that it's just ways that a community can communicate with each other. And I use this, I share space with our school. We rent from a church and we use a community mastery board to just keep all the people who rent space from the church in touch and communicating with each other in a positive way.
So we're throwing around a lot of pretty heady abstract terms here, and in this interview, I hope we're gonna see how this looks. And I know, Nancy, you run an ALC called Mosaic, and Thomas, you are more on the back end, the development end of things, and working to train some facilitators. We'll talk about that also. First of all, I'd like to quote from your website, because I think you have a really great five-line kind of something that draws you in and makes you gives you a more concrete vision of what this could be. And I'm going to read it from your website. It says, if we want our children to grow up to be independent, why not give them practice and self-direction? If we want them to be motivated, why not let them pursue what interests them? If we want them to be passionate, why not let them engage in and explore what they love? If we want them to be creative, why not give them the opportunity to design their own education? And if we want them to create a better world, why not let them get started now? So it sounds to me like what you're describing with those really eloquent lines is a free school, or something like a North Star that Ken Danford and I talked about on the first episode of the podcast. And so what makes an Agile Learning Center, a school, different from just a free school where young people go and they kind of enjoy the freedom of self-direction within the boundaries of kind of, you know, community rules?
Well, a few things. I mean, I think in a lot of ways it is a free school. It's just a kind of intentional way of going about creating and structuring and sustaining one. So that's kind of part of, you know, this whole project idea came from a friend of mine and a mentor to Nancy and I, who we work with, Arthur Brock, who was a parent at Manhattan Free School when I was working there, and kind of started having conversations with him about what it would look like to kind of bring the free school concept into the 21st century. His experience in that world back in the 90s and my experience with that world in New York had some similar crossover, and so his idea had really come from doing that, helping start a free school or two, and then going and working in software and seeing some of these crossover patterns that were being developed in the software world and how they could be applied even more effectively than some of the structures that are used in free schools, I think. So,
and, yeah, just providing more lean tools and practices to help make the focus of the kids on when they come to school, it's, oh, what can I do today? What can I create today? Instead of like, what, you know, like, In a lot of democratic, you know, free schools, you've got these long meetings. And one example that we'll give, this question comes up in our parent interest nights, is, you know, let's say you have like kids trying to decide like, oh, we got a microwave. Where should we put the microwave? Oh, we should put it over here on this table. No, we should put it over here. And then like 3 hours later, this decision, the microwave.
Democracy.
And then you feel like, and even if that decision ends up being a horrible decision, you don't want to move the microwave because you spent 3 hours debating it. Whereas
you're so terrified of going into another meeting and spending 3 hours talking about the new location for the microwave.
Right. And at our change-up meetings, we lean it out a lot. And we just kind of like, we understand that we are adults in this space and we're not better or, you know, anything than the kids, but we actually do have some more experience. And so there are times where I'm like, okay, guys, how about we try this out for a week? And then next week at change up meeting, we'll just assess how it feels. And then you're not like, then you're like, oh, well, you know what? The microwave is in the blue table. That doesn't feel good. Let's try it over here. And you're not actually committing. And then this goes, that's just a simple example, but this could go for, you know, really big things. Like, you know, I had kids were making, you know, losing my Chromebooks at school. We came up with a solution for it. You know, we tried out for a week and that, you know, then we keep adding on and changing it with the kids. So it is democratic and the kids are co-creating with us. But the structure and the way that we do it is so much leaner, and I feel like effective and allows the kids more time to self-direct, more time to play, more time to create, and focus on the things they want to focus on.
It's really interesting. I haven't heard that critique of the democratic free school model before. And Sudbury Valley was kind of my gateway drug into alternative schools, and I read all of their books. And their argument is very simple and very compelling. It's, we live in a democracy, why not train kids to be effective participants in a democracy? And what I, where I personally developed from that standpoint was, well, actually, we live in a representative democracy. It's a republic.
Yeah.
And we are not actually debating in a sort of direct democratic way every single little motion that's put on table on the table. We elect people, and although Sudbury schools do that also, they elect officers to make decisions for us, and then we kick those officers out of office when we don't like the decisions they're making. So it sounds like you came from the roots of democratic free schools, but you saw some drawbacks to the ways that they operate. And it sounds like, Nancy, you're making the argument that they do it at the detriment of the kids sometimes.
Well,
is that correct?
I would say, I am excited that free schools exist and that kids can have, that opportunity. I just personally like to operate from a place of individual empowerment and just joy and happiness. And in the short stint that our school was just a democratic free school, I felt like the kids were focused on policing each other rather than what they wanted to create each day. And I think that this is just like a way that we can just get the kids on that path to feel like, okay, so when I want to create a new reality for myself or a different situation, I have this structure in place where I can go and like work with my community. But for the most part, they're empowered to do the thing and be a part of and play, engage in everything that they want to do all day and not focused on so-and-so did this, I'm going to fill out a form, I'm going to, have this meeting about it, I'm going to, X, Y, and Z, and yeah.
I think to be fair, since we're getting into the nitty-gritty of alternative education models here, I think Sudbury makes a distinction between themselves and like the very loosely genred free school, which I think is an important distinction. They have a, I have tremendous respect for what they've done. What you do in a school is you create culture, and there's various different ways of creating that culture. And sometimes it's intentional, sometimes it's not. Sometimes you get there quicker, sometimes you get there slower. But, at the Sudbury Valley School, I think they've created a really like very clear and transparent culture, which makes it easier for people to come in and operate effectively, or decide it's not for them. And I think what free schools is, again, like more of a loosely genre thing. And schools that are trying to be Sudbury schools or working with that model, some of them get there faster or slower in creating that culture. For me, it is kind of what you brought up, Blake. Like, I guess I just don't necessarily agree that a political democratic process, like the emphasis on that, is the most effective way to create healthy culture. And I think that's what Nancy's alluding to, in that when you start out from that point of like, okay, there's 30 kids in a room and you're all free to do what you want, there's no rules, and now we have to make up all the rules and we have to vote on them, and there's to be, two-thirds majority or consensus or what, like you focus on all this process, and that's really what Agile is trying to get to in software, and what it gets to in this context too is like, you should start with your people, and your processes should always serve your people. And so sometimes that means chucking political processes out and coming up with new ones that are quicker and more effective. So I agree that like when people say, you're practicing democracy because we live in a democratic society, like I don't actually experience our society that way. And I don't think people make real change in the world by voting. Not to say that it isn't important to vote in certain contexts, but people make real change in the world by, having effective relationships, by inventing new systems, by, learning how to collaborate with people and call out innovation, and there's skills that are actually useful in making change in the world. And I don't think playing parliament necessarily is like the highest on that list, though through that process I think kids are learning tremendous things. So I certainly don't knock schools that are doing almost exactly what we're doing, really trying to do the same thing. It's just been through my experience and through the experience of others that I'm working with that we've found that there's, kind of a more effective way for us, at least, to come about creating these kinds of healthy learning communities.
Let's talk about the terms agile and lean, which you've been using. For those of us who have, no experience in the software world, it might just sound like you have, kids with high dexterity. They can move around quickly and jump over things.
Yeah, we only accept cheetahs into the school.
Oh, I see. You're a multi-species school.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So catch up.
So give us the breakdown. What is agile? What does lean mean? And how are you taking it from this world of computers and software and applying it to a school?
Yeah. Well, agile and lean mean slightly different things. If you're in that world, they mean very different things, I guess. But agile, at least, if you were borrowing the term from software development in the sense that there's this thing called the Agile Manifesto that kind of breaks down what agile software development is about. In software development, it's been about restructuring companies and focusing on moving from a place of, like, you know, managers and authoritarian kind of workplaces to a place where people have more freedom and autonomy, and where alignment and autonomy can actually be harmonious rather than something that you have to fight against. So for us, Agile applied to education is about starting with the kids and recognizing that they have, you know, all the inherent value already within them, and that our job as facilitators is to create an environment where they can get behind the wheel of their learning and living, and they can feel empowered to kind of engage their strengths. And we use these tools and practices for kind of scaffolding that self-directed learning process. And none of it's things that kids have to do, but are all options for them to engage in, to, you know, make set intentions for the day, make their intentions visible, reflect daily on how they spend their time and what they're accomplishing and what they're not accomplishing, not from a place of judgment, but for them from a place of self-knowledge. So I know when I was working in free school, we would say a lot to people, like, you know, kids are learning self-awareness. Like, that's part of our curriculum. If we had a curriculum, our hidden curriculum, it would be self-awareness. And though I believe that was true, and it was, what we're actually doing now is really, like, kind of accelerating that process for them by giving them tools that we use as facilitators and find very effective to facilitate self-awareness. So
that way they can be, like, to me, agile as well, is like they can actually be agile enough to interact with the world as it is right now. In a traditional school, when a child is five, we're preparing them for something 18 years down the road. You know, for example, I know when I went to college, there was no social media, so I could never have been prepared for a job to be a social media manager, a lot of what I do is on social media. You know, so how are we actually saying that we know what to train them for? And these things we borrowed from agile software management, thinking about how when software was, you know, booming, if you have this, like, waterfall approach, would be the opposite, where you have, like, an idea, and then you do step one and step two, step three, and then 2 years later you have this product, but software has changed so much by then that it's outdated. It's kind of like what we're doing with the education model. So what we're doing is giving the kids the tools that actually help them be responsive to what's happening right now. So they're always knowing how to learn and how to know who they are and what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are and how they want to engage in the world. So no matter how the world changes, they can still adapt to it.
So give me an example of some of these agile learning tools or systems that you are helping these kids learn and that are a daily part of life in an ALC school.
I guess some of the basic concepts of, like, co-location and in agile, you have people of all different departments and expertise on working on teams together rather than segregated. So we kind of have that naturally through age mixing and through just kind of self-generative curriculum. But to, like, the practical stuff is, you know, we focus on this kind of what we call this agile cycle of growth or learning, of setting intentions, acting and reflecting on them, and then sharing as well. So every day kids are spending more, they're beginning their day setting intentions for their day and using a tool that we call Kanban, or is called Kanban, to make those tools visible. So Kanban comes from manufacturing and has been adapted to kind of, like, you know, personal time management, project management. I'm sure you've heard of Trello, Blake, and...
Yeah, I like Trello. It's very helpful. It's just to see something visual and see, like, a to-do list and then doing and then done, and you get to move the little stickies from one to the next. It's all very exciting.
It's basically a virtual Kanban, and that's what, you know, the kids will utilize that. And again, the reason why we do the teacher training and all of that part is so important, because it's really hard to find adults that work with kids that can help kids actually see what is in the done column, what they did do that day or that week, and not judge them for it. That's a big piece. So just like not place placement value judgments on the kids, but just to honestly say, okay, so like, how did that feel? Did that feel really good? You know, do you want to do anything differently next week? Or, you know, do you want to do something differently tomorrow? What, you know, what do you want to keep doing? What do you want more of? What do you want less of? So that's, you know, we're not grading them, it's still free school, but we do ask that they take a look at what they're doing so that they can see what serves them and what doesn't serve them.
So my favorite question to ask anyone running an alternative school is, what's required at your school? What's non-negotiable? And so are these tools like using a Kanban board required to be a member of your school, or can a student even chuck that into the garbage bin also?
I don't know. At my school, I wouldn't say it's like very required. What's required is participation in our community meetings. So we ask that they come to a set the week meeting on Monday mornings, where we sketch out our week and just, you know, make offerings and schedule out like, oh, this is field trip here, or who wants to practice Spanish with me and things like that, or organize a game of tag or a park trip. And then on Fridays we do a change-up meeting, and change-up meeting is our leaner democratic process where we just kind of say, hey, you know, there are ants in the library and I really don't think people should be eating in there. Can we try eating only in the art room? Let's try that out for a week because it's just not getting clean, you know, or whatever, anything like that.
And what does change up mean, Nancy? Why that word?
Because it's like you change up the school, and that could even be like, we want more, you know, like we want, actually the last change up meeting, the kids asked for longer school, more school on Fridays. And
oh my gosh, that's a first in the history of education.
We have half days on Fridays so that staff can meet and use the afternoon to connect. And we also do our change-up meeting on Fridays. So what we're practicing right now, or we've implemented for this is the second week we'll do it, I said, well, how about we do change-up meeting on Thursdays so Fridays feel longer, because you're not, usually change-up takes anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes where we discuss different things. So like that's where you come up with solutions to problems. And last week's problem was school's too short on Friday. So that's what we're trying out.
So they need to, at ALC Mosaic, the school that you started in Charlotte, the students have to participate in all group meetings. But otherwise, it's essentially like a free school. They can show up, flop down on the couch, and play video games the whole time. They can do stuff as long as it doesn't break the community rules, like, you know, creating a mess and leaving it there or hurting someone.
Yeah, whatever the community agreements we come up with at change-up meeting, we ask them to adhere to that. So they have to, you know, we do say that they have to come to that meeting.
Go ahead.
I was just going to follow up and say, and then do staff members at ALC Mosaic, do they kind of gently suggest like, oh, if you want to do something, why don't you write it up and put it on this Kanban board? Or kind of gently suggest these other tools without making them a non-negotiable? Is that how it works there?
I mean, we, you know, just model it and we embody it. Charlotte, my coworker, does it, you know, she's been really trying to have like this big physical Kanban to like limit her, what we call her our WIP, our work in progress. So you should only have one thing in your doing column so you can focus on doing it without getting distracted. And so she'll like actually do it very visually in the room, like, I'm doing this now, because there's, you know, with kids all around, you can get distracted. So we model it, and we do. Like, I mean, I talk to the kids, too. I ask about, you know, when they're, I tell them on the Trello boards, I do like to capture things and accomplishments that they do, and one of the kids asks why, and I'm like, well, you know, I had a kid last year who left and wanted to apply to a summer camp, and I had to write up a narrative transcript of what she did at school so that she could get into the summer camp. I can't remember what 23 kids do, so I do need to capture sometimes, you know. Yeah. So they actually just understand that, and they're just like, okay, cool, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think a lot of them are appreciative of, I mean, especially the older kids in New York. We have slightly older population, and having that feedback that you can go through and like see all these, this done column or print it out and, you know, play with it in a spreadsheet of all the stuff you enacted and completed in a year, you know, maybe it's never really useful for you to look back at that, and then someday it will be really useful, or maybe you engage with it a lot like I do. And you know, another agile principle is this idea of doing like a retrospective of of really documenting everything that you do and then evaluating it on a regular basis so you can see for yourself, like, how am I spending my time and is it effective and, like, what am I, where's my log jams? Like, what am I spending a lot of time on that isn't really as, like, effective use of my time or isn't making me happy or isn't serving me? And make informed decisions about what you want to do next. So I think that, you know, there's this, it's that idea of having data and information, but being clear that it's for the individual whose data it is to benefit their own, you know, their own process and their own learning.
This sounds like life training that everyone deserves a chance to get. It's like, how do I self-reflect and realize when I'm being effective or not effective? How do I figure out what I want? And then, you know, break it down to little steps and only work on one step at a time.
That's what most parents say at the PINS. Like, well, we want to go to this school too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one other distinction when we're talking about what kids have to agree to, we have a student agreement that we asked them to sign at the beginning of the year that just basically lists some basic things that Nancy said, you know, like respecting yourself and others and showing up to these, like, meetings that take up all of, you know, 10% of your day. I view what ALCs are as more of an, I think I said it in the beginning, as an intentional learning community more than a school or more than a free school. I know Sudbury really focuses on, is kind of like a libertarian democracy in a lot of ways. It's very much about, you know, the individual is king, and if culture happens, it'll be, you know, because it happens in little pockets that little individuals create. And, you know, we do have some stuff where we're kind of saying, like, well, creating culture and having community is part of the buy-in. And so if you just want to, like, hang out in your room and play video games all day or read alone all day and not be bothered, then, you know, maybe it doesn't make sense to come to an ALC. But you certainly could have 90% of your day to do those things alone if you wanted to, and that would be fine too.
If you're willing to come and hear what, you know, people have to say at the change up meeting and coming to set the week and hearing, you know, different offerings, then if you want to be alone all day, sure. But you can't just opt out of being a part of just those minimal meetings.
And I imagine, as with many democratic free schools or with North Star model centers, you have some kids who might do that and spend all of their time sort of observing for a period in the beginning before they buy in and come around and start becoming more active participants. They sort of go through a de-schooling period. Is that true?
Yeah, I've seen kids de-school in all different kinds of ways. It's just been interesting to watch. I don't even know where to start on that.
Yeah, every kid's different. I mean, there's some kids that show up and it's like, you know, surprisingly, they've been in school for 8 years, and this is just like this paradise that they didn't know existed, and here they are, like, just ready to jump in and take advantage of everything and try everything, and, like, are contributing members and, like, you know, really add a lot to the culture and the environment and the energy. And then there's kids who you'd think would have no reason to not experience it that way and really need to take a lot of time to kind of find their engagement point. So, you know, as facilitators, you just have to have spaciousness for people and patience. And again, that's like the whole perspective we're taking, is that, you know, we're loving and trusting people to develop on their own terms and just creating a safe container for them to engage in a supportive and healthy and loving community while they do it.
Well, and that another thing to mention is, so we do have the set the week meeting on Monday and the change up meeting on Friday, but they check in and out every morning in what we call spawn points, because so many kids like Minecraft, they call them the spawn points, where a small group of students with just one facilitator, you know, I have a group of kids and Charlotte has a group of kids and Dan has a group of kids down here, and hear what they want to do that day and just kind of like remind them, hey, so, you know, on Monday we said that today we're going to, you know, cook. There's a group of people cooking. There's a group of people going on a park trip at two. There's, you know, think, just remind them of the, because they're children, and say, you know, do you guys have anything else? Do you need any other support from me? We kind of go around and share intentions, and this takes all of 10 minutes, but it's also just so that an adult, you know, is there kind of like noticing the nuances. Like, we kind of see, like, when one kid's kind of down because they got into a fight with their friend or something else is going on. And I think it's important for us to just have real relationships with them and breaking them up into smaller groups to kind of start out their day. And then at the end of the day, reflect with that same small group. I think if you have a facilitator who, again, is really embodying all of the values that we have, and especially around the just seeing and holding every child in light, really helps, again, add to the community and adds to the culture and helps kids feel safe and like they have someone to go to if they have a problem.
What you just identified, Nancy, regarding the daily check-ins and the power of small groups and the importance of having real relationships, that's a lot of what I took away when I started working at Not Back to School Camp, run by Grace Llewellyn, because those are very foundational aspects of that camp also. And those are very new to me. Despite having read everything about Sudbury, everything about a lot of different alternative school models. And so anyway, I'm really glad to hear that those are important parts of your school. Before we get carried away talking too much about schools, I want to make sure I get each of your personal stories, your sort of origin stories. And so I just want to know how you ended up here, doing what you are now, what you're doing now. So can we start with you, Nancy?
Sure. So I, you know, have been wanting to be a teacher since I was 15 or so, and ended up going to college and teaching in public schools for 3 years. And by my third year, it was really clear to me that I could not, I felt like I was hurting children more than I was helping them. So I quit my job and fortunately found this small Quaker school that was getting ready to close here in Charlotte. They had, you know, it only been open for 2 years, and they had dropped from 17 students to 6 kids, and asked if I would come and work for very little money to help them out. And so I did that for 3 years, and we grew the school up to about 17 kids, and it was awesome and such a great learning experience. But because I had, I was one of two staff members there, and a half-time head, and I had a lot of freedom, and through that freedom discovered, you know, I visited lots of alternative schools and discovered a lot of different things and kind of grew apart from their, some of the fundamental things that they were doing, because I kind of felt like these, you know, progressive schools were, you know, you've got like public schools, which I feel like are honestly run like prisons, and then you've got some progressive schools that are just kind of like nicer, kinder prisons.
And ouch.
So I grew to become too radical for even this little small alternative school. So I quit as well, and then said, well, you know, I maybe one day in the future, in 5 or 10 years, I'll start a school. I'll just, you know, I got some other job for work, and I remember I started journaling every day, like, what would the perfect school be like? And then, you know, 4 or 5 months after I quit that job, was reached out to by a parent co-op community here in Charlotte that heard through, just because a lot of alternative parents kind of knew of me here, heard that I wasn't working with kids, and said, do you want to work with kids? And I was like, absolutely. So I worked with that parent group for 8 months before I started a homeschool co-op in January of 2013, and then opened as a full-blown school in August of 2013, and spent a lot of time with those parents reading tons of books. We read Summerhill, we read Free to Learn, we read, so many. But I think that was a really important thing for us to do, because when I did open, we had such a solid foundation so that there was always a school in existence and other people could come and try it out and leave and discern if it didn't work for them. But we kind of always knew that this was, that we could move forward. But we opened as a democratic free school after reading Summerhill and Sudbury, you know, books and things like that. And as we discussed earlier, there were certain things about the kids policing each other and just like the meeting process that I just wasn't really excited about. And also come, I would say, November, I was so worn out and overworked and stressed out because I had never run a business before. I have no accounting or bookkeeping experience at all, and that was really tough. And then on top of that was working with children all day and then all night trying to do the stuff on the back end, and was just exhausted. And I thought there just had to be another way. And I was still really lonely too, you know, working in the small school before and kind of doing this by myself. I just was trying any way I could just to find other people to work with and other people that I felt like I could grow with and learn from. So I heard about Agile Learning Centers through a mutual friend, Dave Tobias, who told me after meeting me that I would really like what they were doing. And I ended up meeting Thomas, and by January of 14 was clear that I wanted to make our school an Agile Learning Center. And Arthur and Thomas came down and worked with our communities. And I would say from January to March, the school ended up doubling in size. And, you know, now we have two different campuses and serve kids young as two and up to, you know, 13. And as they get older. And it's just been an incredible journey and path. And that's my story.
So the Mosaic School turned into ALC Mosaic after you got involved with ALC. And was it a big transition between the first organization and the second, or did you just sort of add on these agile learning tools and it wasn't a big deal?
You know, in the beginning, it was actually surprisingly simple. The school was closed for winter break, and then I kind of like reset in January, and Arthur had come down, and he kind of was there that first week. And it was just, I started using a Kanban board with one of the oldest kids who had been in a lot of not a good public school experience, and that was kind of detoxing into our community. And I just felt like he needed a little more direction and like, okay, so what do you want to do today? Like, what are you excited to do? And I was using this Kanban board with him, and then just naturally, like all the other kids were like, we want to tell you what we want to do. Like, I want to do a science project, and like, I want to, you know, play with the blocks, and I want to, you know, I want to learn about butterflies. And it was just, and then I never asked any other kid besides the oldest kid to use one, use a Kanban board. And I remember by March, like the youngest 5-year-old's like, well, where's my Kanban board? I want to tell you what I want to do today. Like, I think that again goes back to that cultural reset. The focus was on what do you want to do? What do you want to create? What do you want to learn about? What do you want to know? What do you want to explore? And the kids all have many things to say about that.
Thomas.
Yeah.
Where'd you come from, Thomas?
How far back do we start? Well, when I was in first grade, sort of, actually. I'll briefly say, when people ask me this question, when I was in first grade, I was homeschooled, and then I went back to school halfway through second grade because I was bored, and I lived in an area where I didn't have friends accessible. And I remember taking a test to see for them to test me, like, where I was. And my homeschool regimen was, for that first grade year, was to get up at 10 a.m. and be done with school by noon and play all day, play the rest of the day. And so when I went back, I was well ahead of everyone and like the reading books and curriculum and stuff. And so that was the first time a light bulb went off in my head very clearly about school. And I was just kind of like, what the hell have you guys been doing this whole time? So that was a formative thing for me. But I got into this whole business a long time ago, I guess right after college. I found the book Summerhill, as a lot of people do at some point, through reading Eric Fromm in college on my own and through a friend's recommendation. And I moved to Manhattan to work with Manhattan Free School, which had just started up in 2009. It had started in 2008, and I worked with that school for about 4 years. A really lovely woman, Pat Werner, founded the school and really kind of held it together that whole time. And just she was just somebody who loved people to the limit. And it was amazing working with her and just kind of like basking in that energy that she had of just always seeing the best in people. But I think she just kind of got burned out eventually because she was carrying so much of the operation and trying to figure things out and trying to say yes to a lot of people. And she resigned right before the 2011-12 school year, I think. And I was also really burned out after the end of that year and was planning to take some time off from the whole thing so that I wouldn't lose my commitment and passion to it, because I was getting pretty burned out trying to make it work there. And so luckily, that's when Arthur stepped in and kind of, you know, this opportunity where the school was going to close became an opportunity to try this new thing out that we had been talking about for a few months leading up to that point. So luckily he stepped in, and with the help of my best friend, Aaron, who was working at the school at that time, stayed on to work. And another friend, Eric Baer, who I work with now in ALC, helped support the school that year while I had some time away and spent that time learning about education technology and kind of bringing myself up to speed with all that and learning about Agile and the ins and outs of that, and kind of working with Arthur behind the scenes to develop the concepts of this model and the bigger vision for the project. And then the following summer, after testing some of those ideas at the school, I kind of took the project on as saying, like, committing to it. And it was birthed the summer of 2013 at what is called Emerging Leader Labs, which is another project that Arthur started with a friend of his, which is basically an 8-week residential social change incubator kind of program. So that was extremely formative for this project, because it kind of created the DNA of what we're doing. We kind of created our own Agile Learning Center at Emerging Leader Labs and really like learned how to work on creating culture first in this context. So then we launched the whole ALC thing officially that fall in 2013 at what was Manhattan Free School, with 6 kids and me and my good friend Ryan, who facilitates there now still. And Nancy came and visited us that fall and basically created the opportunity for the big part of the vision was to create a network of schools, not just one school. So that's something that was really struck me in my experience with alternative schools, is that there's lots of them around the country that are fighting to exist and kind of doing it independently, and they all come together for the Aero conference or whatever and get really excited and then go back to our world where we're alone and isolated. So a big vision that I was holding for this was that we, you know, create a community of facilitators and we have a network of support. So that first fall, actually, we created a meetup group in New York, and what we first used the term ALF, or Agile Learning Facilitator. We had ALF meetups, and
not to be confused with the alien that eats cats.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm
just want to make sure.
Personal goal that one day when you Google ALF, Agile Learning Facilitator will come up.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I should probably be careful with that declaration. That's pretty ambitious, but anyway.
Yeah, I want to hear about your vision for Agile Learning Facilitators. We just have a few minutes left, and so give me the good stuff.
Yeah, well, like I said, I mean, at the end of Emerging Leader Labs, I remember having like a kind of aha moment when we had this idea, and it kind of came from really like the reality of at the free school, you have lots of almost more adults than students like reach out to you because you're this like niche, like, you know, like radical schooling concept. So there's all these adults studying education somewhere that are like reaching out to you and they want to volunteer and they want to get involved. So we saw it as a way of kind of taking that action potential and doing something with it. So we invited all the people who had reached out to us about volunteering to a meetup where we were going to share with them some of the tools and practices we were using and some of the visions we had, and basically say, hey, like, this is this idea we have and we think it's awesome and we think it could do big things. And it's only going to do big things if people come in and like make it happen with us. So we were basically offering people an opportunity to come in and create their own jobs, create their own value, do something for the project that gave it momentum so that it could sustain them. And people started doing that in different ways. So we attracted more staff members that way. And then I kind of pitched that to Nancy, and then she helped me take it to the next level with creating ALF Summer, which is this, you know, kind of miniature version of Emerging Leader Labs where we co-train, co-create with each other and kind of create our own ALC so that we're practicing what we're holding for the kids. We're practicing doing it ourselves.
The way you described it to me that I really like, Thomas, is that ALF, Agile Learning Facilitators, the training is sort of a teacher's college for self-directed learning. Mm-hmm. And so are you training people to start their own organizations or to go back and work with their families, or
it can be all of the above. It could be someone who's just interested in the projects and you know, wants to kind of understand what we're doing. It could be someone wanting to start a homeschool collective, someone wanting to start a school. We have that, you know, that happen. Or people who want to work in an ALC that just know that this is kind of like a part that's important to me, that a person has like kind of that foundation. And it's really interesting. You know, we have like a week where we kind of run through a bunch of different we run through tools and practices, but then we also have some like really deep dives into the foundations. And then in there we do a 2-week summer camp so that people who want to facilitate with kids actually get to facilitate with kids and be around people who have been doing it longer. And then we can kind of, you know, talk about it and reflect. And then we have a week after where we do like a kind of like, you know, well, what are next steps? How did this go? What, you know, what went well, what didn't, you know, go well, what can we do next time kind of thing. And it's amazing to actually have like this community of people that actually support each other. And after last year's ALF summer, you know, we do calls every single Monday night, and now we're no longer isolated schools. I get to, you know, talk to Ryan and Abby up in New York, and then my friend Alex, who just started an ALC in Puerto Rico. And man, you know, like this thing was going on today. I'm really struggling with it. Like, have you guys come up with something like this before? And then we just all talk about it and really look forward to that connection time, and then keep that momentum going through to the next ALF summer.
And I see that you've got groups in Everett, Washington, in other parts of New York, in Oahu, in Melbourne, Asheville, Summertown, Tennessee. These are all different groups, and some of them are startups. But it seems like you're really building a robust network all across North America and, well, Australia too. why don't we close with this question? Where would you like to see agile learning centers in 5 years? What is your big enchilada vision of success for this?
I don't know. I mean, I have lots of different fantasies of how that could go. I try not to be too attached to any of them, but at the same time, you know, just continue to remain driven towards creating new things. For me, it's really more about focusing on like on what we do at ALF Summer and what we do day to day in the schools. I want to see a really like well-connected, thriving, generative facilitator community and network that does things together, that produces together, that spends time together, and continues to, you know, attract really talented people to do this work. That's something I think that's been challenging for alternative ed. And I also want to see, you know, the ALCs that we have just like thriving and just experiencing, you know, new plateaus of like what a generative rather than a consumptive education can be like. I'm also really interested in what we can do with online collaborative tools and attracting people to that want to help us build, you know, tools for online collaboration, for having like an intentional online learning community and what's possible with that. If you have, you know, to have a social network that actually supports physical locations. And lastly, I'll say I see a network that, you know, where facilitators are spending a week at a different ALC for professional development / vacation, and where kids are traveling to other agile learning centers to experience, you know, the same kind of education in a different culture and a different community.
Majority is happening now with our kids going up to New York and things like that. It's kind of exciting.
My guests today have been Thomas Parker and Nancy Tilton. Thomas and Nancy, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Blake.
Thanks, Blake.
This is the Real Education Podcast. This show is produced with the assistance of Zen Zenith, who also created the music. For more episodes, visit blakebowles.com/podcast. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon.